You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Right down the middle, still Giles Barnes. A little touch on its way for Bruins. And that is an absolutely fantastic counter-attacking goal by the Houston Dynamo. Top class Dynamo.
Sunday, May 10th, it's Steve Perry, Eric Anderton, and I'm Ian Clark, and that wasn't part of the promo package. Toronto FC are down 2-1 in their home opener by a struggling Houston Dynamo side. This was the perfect opponent to put on a show in the renovated BMO Field in front of 30,000 fans, and it fell flat. We go over our first impressions of the stadium, then look at the performance and try to identify where the lack of balance is on the pitch and where it can be remedied. We discuss the new South End, then ahead to Montreal, New England, and Portland. All in the next 40 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
Observation is the word. It was there's 85 new, 100 potentially new people coming out to BMO this game, and it was same shit weather, same shit performance, and the same shit result.
Yeah.
2-1 loss. Yeah. Yeah. It was the same old thing. Everything's new. They spun this game, spun this whole week. Everything was a shiny new stadium, but the same old product on the field. I think for me, probably, I mean, obviously, I'm just very disappointed. But I mean, it wasn't like we were hosting, you know, one of the top teams in the league as well. I mean,
which
Houston
makes it kind of worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a disappointment. I think.
And I'm curious to see how they're gonna, I don't know if spin is the right word, but how they're gonna play this result, because Houston have been awful at the start of this year. And this was, if anyone you wanted coming in for your home opener to kind of show off and look good, this was a great opponent.
Yeah,
because they haven't won since I think it was April 11th at home against Montreal.
That's 9 goals in 3 games, I think, they shipped.
So. Yeah. So they've been extremely poor. And then we just come out today, and it was just, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in terms of what the performance was like on this afternoon. But it was pretty dismal. Like, it wasn't, as much as we saw the commercials and we've heard the talk and everything, and whatever that's come out, and even the road, these last two road results, which I think could have spun the 4-game losing streak differently.
It did, in a way.
Yeah.
And then Montreal's a weird game. That Wednesday game, it was like it didn't exist to some people. And
didn't exist to me.
Yeah. So you know, it was like it didn't even kill that we're coming in on 2 games in a row winning. So
it didn't exist to the starting lineup.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I thought of it too. It's just like, how can you, just the Voyagers Cup and the league are just two different beasts, you know, like,
yeah,
all together. You can't really compare those two fixtures or those type of results from one another, because they're just completely different.
Which is interesting, because the weight of the competition qualifies you for Champions League, but they treat it like, you know, the most secondary third cup possible.
Yeah, like, it's almost like if we get in, well, so yeah, we got in. All right, yeah, great. Now we'll start like playing a little more seriously. But up until that point, I think it's gotten to that point anyways, I think, for most of these teams that's what it is. But that's not what's important. What's important is today was the home opener on Mother's Day for all the mamas out there. They decided to schedule this big event on Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock, which was, I still shake my head. I'm sure they don't have all the say in the scheduling, but
they're doing a lot of those, the MLS. There's a lot of Sunday night games this year. I don't know if it's more than normal, but I'm noticing it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of Sunday games this season, so I don't know what, if that's just a TV thing they're trying to reel in a certain audience for these games. But, I mean, the main thing that, why we're here, that I think is the opening observations is, in quotes, new BMO Field. I don't know, guys.
Yeah, sure.
Initial observations.
Okay. So walking up, you see this big wall of red on the east side where the second tier is now. Yeah. Sort of the it looks like the foundation, but it's like this great big marketing thing. I can't remember her name. The woman who did Triumph of the Will would be super proud, because, you know, it's just complete PR magic, right? It's you get in there, you see like the wall of red, you see the Videotron with all the goals that we've ever scored in the last whatever since this team's been a team, and then the fireworks, right? You're blowing the load before the game's even started, and you got to be suspicious that like there's a lot of pomp and circumstance without having seen this team yet at home. Right?
I did think it was odd that we were celebrating before the game. Like, that's just something, the irony of it for me was just like, here we are.
All the banners being rolled
up. It's as if we won a trophy. They're shooting off fireworks and all that stuff, and they haven't even kicked the ball.
It really was the best opportunity to have that pent up, like, the best marketing opportunity was those 7 road games, because, like, 2 months of waiting and waiting and waiting, it gave them the perfect opportunity to just take off from first home game.
Or maybe MLSE realizes after, what, 7 years now? 8 years? How long has this been going on? 7 years?
I think it's nine. I have kind of like this year is not one.
So maybe they realize that this is their best opportunity at a celebration. This is Tim Leiwicki's. What is it? His, like his road.
Swan song or a big idea?
Well, no. I mean, he always talks about the celebration route.
Oh, the parade route.
The parade route. He's always last year.
This is the closest thing he's going to get.
This is it. This is as good as it gets for
him. Well, I will say that, like you were saying, Steve, walking into the stadium, it's that East Stand is a behemoth.
Yeah.
It's fucking huge.
It really feels like, especially when the roof comes on in a year's time, it feels like a proper stadium now.
Yeah, and I would say that also the singing in our section echoes a lot better, so it carries the sound a bit more.
Oh, because there's like a favor. Roof because of the
there's a concrete wall behind everybody, so it's actually bouncing off it and then going out, and so it actually sounds louder than dissipating into like a parking lot, right?
Yeah, and when the roof comes out, I mean, it'll just all be trapped, right? Yeah. It'll all be trapped inside. So that's kind of the thing that I mean, when that roof is in there, that is going to be a monstrosity, because the East Stand is like I said, it's big now, so to put a roof over top of it,
so one of the guys we play soccer with is like in construction, and he knows the people who are involved in the construction of this, and he said it's never going to be ready for the home opener, and it looked like it was somewhat ready, but I also heard reports from people saying, well, no, they're still working on it, and so you're just waiting for people to clear out so they can get back to work.
You could see though on the underside that it was like there was a lot of exposure.
Did you get up to the second tier at all?
No, we didn't.
They did all the concession stands, but everything, there was like a lot of,
unfinished.
Yeah, tape on the drywall and stuff. Like,
yeah.
There's still work to be done, but they got it functional for the home opener at least.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, and it does look like there's a more tight between the East Stand, the South, and the West. Like, it looks like now they're all one.
Sure, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Like, it feels like the stadium is more connected and it's a little bit tighter, and I think when that roof comes in, it's going to be, I mean, it's a bigger stadium, but I think it will be a little bit intimate.
And it's a big ask, too, because, I mean, obviously there's a lot of speculation about Winter Classic this and Argos that, but at the same time, to have, I think it's near 30,000, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have that many seats when there was that many empty seats at games last year, it's a massive, massive undertaking, isn't it?
Well, even today, that was the first thing. Like, I noticed on the West Stand in those middle sections, in the second tier, seats didn't fill up, and there was like good chunks of rows in 105 where the seats never ended up being occupied.
Doesn't mean that they didn't sell them.
True,
and it just means that people didn't show up.
Well, they were reporting 23,000 at one point last year.
And they did report a record attendance today
of 30 something.
There would
be,
of course, because there's more seats.
I got to give it to them. They did a really good job of selling tickets. They saturated the market like crazy. Like, I couldn't get. I had 2 extras that I couldn't use, and I could not get rid of them. As much as I tried on every website and every Facebook, social media, everything, I could not get rid of tickets. So they went to Young and Dundas. They lowered prices. They did, you know, Twitter, you could have this promo code. They did really well at selling it out. But that's all based on the buzz of this is the first game after 7-game road trip and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So middle of July, you know, that's kind of going to be the test, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And how long, what are they going to springboard from this? I mean, they lost this home opener. So they could have really milked it big time, and it would have been a great result, but it wasn't. And maybe let's get into it. Let's sort of roll through this game, because there is a lot. I mean, there's not a lot of great things to talk about, but there is a lot to talk about with regards to this game. And Steve, your initial observations and
Okay, well, I'll say this. I mean, it was a 2-1. So the result is a 2-1 loss. At the beginning of the half, we had three pretty solid chances. It looked like we pretty much had the game. Like, I mean, I didn't see much coming from the Houston side. And then they put two in on us. And it just looked like we had not come out after the second half. It wasn't until the end when we actually started battling for balls and there was like a lot more desperation attempts. But, you know, honestly, I just felt as I started seeing where the gaps were and as, you start to see players getting tired, kind of realize who's got the fitness, who's like, you know, the wheat, you separate the wheat from the chaff kind of. And I felt like for the first time, so here's the flip. This is the positive note. For the first time, we have two pretty solid guys up front, which is we're not used to having that in the front. Like I you know, normally we're struggling for strikers is what I'll say. And we have two guys that look like they work together well and they have good talent and they can do things. And then we have Bradley, and then it's kind of like there's a lot of patches in between, right? So I noticed a lot of different things. Like I saw in the first half, I saw Morgan and Finley working well together, and then they would switch. You'd see Jackson come on the other side. I mean, I don't know, like really, and when we see people coming off the bench taking Jackson off and like Warner's coming in, I don't really see, like, I think the only really great change was Osorio coming in. So yeah. Honestly though, I feel like that back line is not great, and we saw, I don't know if they've worked out how they're playing together yet, because I feel like there's a gap, especially in the middle. I don't want to pick on Haglund or Parkis, and I think Parkis, people feel like with the slide tackles that he had, I think that's kind of a desperation play in sorts, but it's like, you know, it's also can promote kind of like people getting in, getting stuck in and stuff like that. Yeah, for sure. So I just feel like, I'm totally nervous about our back line and about the outside of the middle, if I could say that.
I think that's a very accurate observation of the state of this team. And that's been probably what a lot of people discussed through the first eight games.
Which I feel like is a flip of the script, if I could say.
Yeah.
Because I think that in the past we've not really played, we've not really had a great middle, if I could say that. I mean, I don't know. We have had good players in the middle, but I feel like there's a solid three. But I feel like that's easy to read for any other team, right? We don't have a multi-dimensional game. So, like, when I saw the ball going out to Morgan, then it would come back in the middle, and I need to see him take it out the wing and cross it up or bring it through, or like I need to see more things coming from other players. That's what I need. I need this other players on this team to step up, and so I feel like, I don't know. I just feel okay. It's a good second effort, but we need more. Like, we need to see more from this team, right?
Yeah.
I feel like for the first seven games, we've had this caveat hanging over everything of, oh, well, there's defensive injuries and suspensions and international break. And only in the last couple of games we started to have a consistent back four. And at the same time, is that our starting? Is Caldwell not going to come in and take over Haglund's role at this point?
Yeah, and people were talking about that. So how bad is it? It was a calf injury, right? Like, how bad can a calf injury be that he's been sidelined for so long? For me, that's an issue that as much as I... you know, would say like, you know, you got to give your young players minutes and stuff. I'm just not convinced on Haglund as our starter, and that's I
not
think
in the middle.
Be...
I mean, he was okay. Like, you know, the middle is crucial, right? Not in the middle.
But we've seen, even going last year, I mean, when you isolate him against any player with pace and athleticism, he just gets tooled. And you saw that with Giles Barnes on that second goal where he just, he didn't know what was happening, what direction he was going to go, and he just went right by him and then slotted across to Will Bruin, and Perkey just couldn't catch up to the play. I don't want to isolate him on that, because without seeing the replay, our suspicion was that play began further upfield.
Yeah, for sure it did.
And if I had to guess, one of the things, probably two of the things, I know, Steve, you said in the first half, you know, Toronto did look like they were the better side, but there was a point where, I mean, Houston did get a lot of corners, and they were, you know, driving to the touchline, and that was something that I was concerned about. That was like, fuck, that's just a recipe for disaster with this team, because we've never done well marking off of set pieces. Out of that first half, though, it's just that it is concerning. I mean, obviously, there's the penalty, right? That's the first thing that I think you walk away out of that, and people were talking about.
I want to talk about the first 5 minutes. I mean, there was we had a corner, didn't we? Was it the first? It was the there was.
Yeah, that was the one where
Altidore
had.
Minute? Yeah.
The 5 minute mark.
5 minute mark, and that was the first set piece I've actually seen Toronto FC do. So if anything we've learned out of 9 years, we've learned how to make one set piece, right? I don't think Houston was ready for that, right? And I think that was kind of like, that was a game changer until we let Houston back in the game.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a great play. And I also thought at the 33-minute mark, so I know we slam Jackson all the time, but Jackson did have a good cross. And it went right to the six-yard box, and Finley couldn't get open. I mean, it was a good battle, the defenseman from Houston. And then the last play was an Altidore to Jovinko.
Houston. Oh, yeah, yeah. I have that marked down where he was fighting off. He had a ball in open space, and he fought off two players across the ball, far post to Jovinko. And that was pretty
impressive.
I love
the way Jovinko plays. I think he's, just watching him, he's got great pace. He's got some good moves. He's off-ball running. He's great at a lot of things. I mean, he's also disruptive with the defense. He's always calling fouls on people. He's a great player. And he's not selfish. He gives good service to people. So I think, seeing him and Altidore work together, that's great. And I saw Altidore got like at least four, I counted at least four shots on net, or like including headers and things like that. So I felt like, you know, he's like a point man too, right? I feel like we're gonna get some points out of these guys, right?
I don't want to jump the gun, but there's a bit of, I don't know, the sense of like sensational with Jovinko and Altidore in a way, especially Jovinko, in that, you know, you look at the winner against Philadelphia and the two goals that he got against Dallas, there's just something, he's that much of a step beyond the rest of the team. And at the same time, that's something that I've learned you can't count on, is that otherworldly element. You have to be able to work well as a team. And and it's games like today where working well as a team counts, because, Jovinko is not going to score a goal from 35 yards out every game. But you can't count on that to create your 3 points week in, week out.
And I almost feel like that's part of the smoke and mirrors for this team. I feel like maybe he's part of the PR magic that MLSC wants, because like when he scored that goal at the end of the game, I almost felt like, maybe I almost believed that maybe we might come back and tie this game.
Yeah.
It felt like it was in the cards.
That was almost the same thing last year, though, remember that guy Defoe? He did a lot of, pulling the team up and carrying them on his back for those first dozen games before he got injured. And I think that really set up in a bit of a false sense of security for the team that, we're actually good because we've got this amazing guy who can score goals. And, Jovinko and Altidore might combine for great goals all the time, but what if Jovinko's got to combine with Hamilton for a little while? If there's a bit of an injury crisis up front, like that might not work so well.
I agree. I think, it's really telling in the middle of the season. I mean, you talked about the middle of the season I talk about the middle of the season for when players go to do their national duty.
Oh,
and that's
Gold
when
Cup,
we see our second string, right? And that's when the bench gets to shine or not shine. And that's when we really find out what the team's got. Like, because we've always suffered from not having a deep team. And injury, too. I mean, that's also becomes our Achilles heel at the end of the season, right?
Yep. I want to talk about, I don't know how much there is to talk about, but obviously one of the key play of the first half, I guess you might say, was the penalty that was awarded to Houston and how that came about, which I think was, there was a lot of griping in the stands. I wonder if this is gonna build, because you did hear there was a lot of people where we were sitting that were railing on Bradley throughout this game.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of probably pressure on him as wearing the armband and what he makes that. I don't know. I don't think too many people would. You're gonna argue that was a smart decision on
that
play.
He's the scapegoat, isn't he?
Yeah.
He took the captain.
It's always the defensive midfielder. Julian de Guzman had it all over him for so many years.
I didn't like him either, yeah.
And now it's Bradley's turn. So there you go.
Really.
That's what you get for spending, making your designated player a defensive midfielder.
And that's the definition
midfielder.
Of a scapegoat, isn't it?
Well, Jovinko would be the scapegoat if he hadn't scored all these amazing goals, so default to the next most expensive guy.
Yeah. So, what do you want to talk about? Like, do you think it was a real foul? Is that what you want to talk about?
That's obviously going to be talked about, but...
we're supposed to say it's not.
We could give our 2 cents about it.
My 2 cents is, it was like, I don't know what else you expect when you miss the ball and you slide through a guy. I mean, he could have jumped over him, but no player in their right mind is, when there's no way that he could have gotten to the ball and he got the last touch on it, he's going to go down. And the referee has no choice. I mean, like, you made contact in the box, the guy goes down, and you slid right through him.
Eric, your thoughts?
Yeah, to be honest, that's one part of the game I missed. There's a massive flag in the front of 114, and it covered the slide tackle, so I couldn't see it. So.
Okay, so my thoughts are that Bradley had to make up a lot of distance, so sliding is the best way to do that. And, you know, he was pretty much close to the ball, but he didn't get to the ball first. And certainly the player from Houston did, and he milked it for everything. I mean, you could see it, but as you said, the referee had no option but to call.
He's supposed to milk it, though. That's the way it is these days.
It was close enough that, I mean, unless you had...
So it was a great about acting, and the referee played right into it. And I think it was Bradley's fault for sure. I think it was Bradley's mistake, and I don't know. He should have stayed on his feet.
And,
right? He should have stayed on his feet. Honestly, he should have stayed on his feet.
And the key, and we made the he, keeper made and the keeper made the save.
The keeper did make
the add insult to injury.
I felt bad for him there. Konopka makes a save, and
No one reacted.
And I don't think people understood the penalty, like in our section, because people thought, "Oh, that shouldn't have counted. He got the rebound." I don't think people realize it's a live ball.
How can you be going to a soccer game and not realize that that's going to happen?
I got the sense that people didn't get that.
Yeah, because he made the save, and everyone's like, "Hooray!" And you're like, "Whoa!" The ball's right back at the net.
It's in the net now.
Like, oh,
yeah. I think people felt robbed, but Heber made a great save, and he made another great save at the second half from that corner kick near the end of the game.
Yeah,
where that was dipping down and
it was going in.
That was totally going in, and he flipped it over the bar. And I just thought, wow, he's got that. I mean, I remember when Stefan Fry had those cat-like we used to talk to him about Stefan Fry with those cat-like reflexes with tipping things, and you know, I saw it again tonight.
Yeah, but before we exit the first half, Steve, I mean, you said early on you saw your first real set piece from Toronto FC, but you saw your second one right before the half too.
It's true, yeah, I did.
And we were saying that it's an omen of things to come at BMO Field with the Argos in there. Cheru puts in a nice tidy 3 points right between.
You joked about how this is like an unofficial promotion for the Argos coming in. Right?
I don't want to joke about
there all these shots. Had so many field goals. There's so many balls just shy of the top of the crossbar. Right. I mean, if some of those just would have been a bit lower.
That was because I've probably the first 7 games have been hyping up Bruno, his brother, Benoit Cheru.
That's who I thought we signed at first.
Yeah, but I was like, ooh, Bruno, hopefully not him. Benoit, a little more reliable. But I was like, oh, this was not his best game by far, I thought. He's definitely been far more influential, more steady on the ball, a little better with passing.
Well, we felt it because he got shy with that yellow that he got early, right?
That was one thing I thought.
And he seemed to back off on the tackling a bit. So, and as the guy who's central mid, I mean, you don't want that.
No, not as your number 8, right?
You can't have him like,
anyway. And that was surprising that he, because the goal that he scored against Chicago was just beautiful touch, and it was on the run, and that was kind of like similar, like angle and whatnot, and the same kind of touch that he required, and it was terrible. It was like, whatever goal, and you're just like, that would have made such a difference, right, in terms of the mentality of the team coming into the second half. And then, of course, within 7 minutes into the second half, Houston's up 2-0 with the play that we already described, where Giles Barnes went through Haglund and then laid it off to Will Bruin, and there you go. It's 2-0, and we're chasing the game.
And Houston didn't stop. I mean, they kept coming at us. They did have some other chances that broke through, but nothing that was like spectacular or stellar or like anything that I felt like Houston deserved this game. I just felt like we gave them the game in some ways, right? I just feel, I don't know.
I think that's what, again, the takeaway was that
we gave them the game, and then we tried to make it up at the end, and we just didn't have it.
Yeah, because that's the takeaway, is that especially when you look on paper and the quality of individual players, it's just like Houston didn't bring much to the table today.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have any cutting edge, maybe except for like the pace and athleticism of Barnes. Like, they didn't have anything that was particularly threatening at all times. And we did. We had players like that, but it just was falling short almost at every opportunity.
Which, when you said at the beginning of this podcast, it was a disappointing game, that I think is the point. That's the part where it's disappointing. I don't think the loss is almost standard. Like, you expect a loss, right? Okay, so you don't. I mean, it's a new team. You don't know what to expect yet, but like, they've had a lot of games to see. You kind of, the disappointment is that this was a game that we should have won.
It was there for the taking. I think you said at the beginning. This was, if you're going to get a game with break a record of attendance and everyone like desperate to get back to BMO, like, this was the game to go out and get like 3 goals to the good kind of thing.
Yeah.
And just have like a celebration.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
I mean, save getting Chivas USA back together for one more game. Like I said, we couldn't have asked for a better opponent who's who had a worse run of form, hadn't won on the road, couldn't win at home, and they didn't have Brad Davis. That was something else people didn't realize. They didn't have Brad Davis in the starting lineup, who's a fucking TFC killer. And we lost 2-1. So I'm not too pumped about it. And if we look at heading out of this game, you know, we were hosting Montreal midweek, and that's one that's could be a knife in the gut, right? If they get through the Voyagers Cup, and we can blow it off all we want, but there's nothing positive.
We've already blown off the first game.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's nothing positive you can take from losing to them. And then we go on the road to New England next weekend, which is going to be, that's probably the best team in the Eastern Conference. So we could be looking back on the next home game, which I'm not mistaken. Oh, we forgot our magnets. I think it's Portland. We're hosting Portland on the 23rd, right?
Yeah.
Oof. You know, it's just like, it's the story, the script isn't quite unraveling the way I think that
they had hoped
or as possible.
Well, that's why they got the celebration in early, right?
I think it's easy to get exaggerated about everything. Like, we've got such a weird schedule with 7 away and then, like, 12 of the last 14 or whatever at home. Like, it's just so staggered that I think it's easy to think, oh, you know, we're going to be champions. Oh, we're not going to win a game. Like, it's so easy to become that exaggerated with this
team. It's the miracle of Crystal de Sangro.
Yeah.
Can't build the stadium in time.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. I don't remember in that book, did they even actually ever get the stadium?
They did.
Eventually.
They did, yeah.
Eventually.
And one of the first games on that beautiful grass that they put in, it snowed.
Yeah.
And people were their feet were going through the pitch because, like, it was frozen and it was too cold and the weight was...
And they dropped the ball and just stuck.
Yeah. It was just... Anyway.
It's a classic.
Yeah. So I guess we're not exactly like them, but...
Okay. Well, let's you know what, here's... Let's just do two quick things to see that I'll throw out there. The first thing, I want to talk about perhaps the roster. And then because I don't think it's a stretch, and people probably already turning their wheels about... There's got to be change at some point through this summer. I can't imagine
like
there.
Like from the coaching staff?
Well, first I'm saying with the players, the personnel.
Yeah, okay.
And we saw this, it was the last year where we started off with Jackson and Ray, and off the hop, things looked pretty good. But as they settled in the season, you know, Ray is shipped out, Oduro comes in. I wouldn't be surprised if we see A, new defender, B, new midfielder. We've already talked about that. And I think that's the issue, is that for whatever the quality is in either of those areas of the pitch, it's almost canceled out by what else there is. Whereas Jackson, for whatever good he offers equally bad. And Finley, for whatever good he offers, he can't hold up a ball and he can't maintain possession.
They ignored him the other week. There was nothing on the left
two weeks ago. Yeah. And then it was like once he flipped sides away from Morgan, it was like a black hole on that side of the pitch. It just didn't work out. And then, of course, we've already discussed the concerns with a Perkey Haglund partnership in the middle. That is just...
I don't want to bash Haglund because, I mean, especially against Dallas, he was hung out to dry kind of thing. But at the same time, he's young, blah, blah, blah. He's got potential. But there's a lot of errors leading to goals against that are coming from him. And even Caldwell, to a certain extent, last year, he didn't have the legs to play the kind of defending that they were playing. So they were setting themselves up for failure, but at the same time, I'm not filled with confidence when Haglund is in the back line.
Yeah, because the truth is, any play that where he's at caught out in open field, I have concerns about. He's great on our set pieces. He's shown to be tenacious in that, and he's tough in the area, but that's not a complete game.
Well, this is one of those intangible things, too, because Caldwell comes back. He's the vocal, experienced defender. That intangible part of football, how is that going to change the game?
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think Vancouver, they was Caldwell and Perkey, wasn't it? And they played a really high line and got caught out and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you know, that's sometimes you need that kind of person to shout and organize things, and maybe that's Caldwell's job.
I think it is. I mean, and you look to experience for that, right? Especially somebody who's been on this team for a bit.
So you can lose that, the youthfulness that Haglund can boast, and bring that through the experience of Caldwell and the leadership of Caldwell to organize things.
Yeah, and you can actually play a person up high, like you could do a sweeper-stopper, and you usually put the faster guy up front, right? I mean, they're not going to do that. They're going to play four across, but, you know, you definitely put the guy who's got younger legs doing the running down, right?
And then, of course, the other sort of tidbit, and we don't need to dive into it too much, but I do think that the other thing that I'll be watching for is how much rope Greg Vanney gets. And we've already heard the rumors that have been going around of them might be, they might be dipping into the Italian market for a coach or for a club president or something like that.
But I think this is ridiculous, because if you're going to bring, he was interim from the moment they got rid of Nelson. And if they want to get in a guy, they got to get him in the summer, and they got to let him be a part of this rebuilding.
Yeah,
because
sure.
if they get rid of Vanney after a dozen games, we're back to square one. And it's just, it's
somebody trying to find
and everything seems out of sync. Like Lewecki's departure is to be determined. And if a new coach comes in, is that Tim Bez's time to leave? And just everything's out of sync. Everything needs to be all together off the pitch in one like cycle kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been the biggest problems with this team, was that we knew when the team was bought by Rogers and Bell, and you have Anselmi, who's, you know, a real jewel, going around making high-level decisions that would have quickly been overturned by the new ownership when they got settled in. And then the same thing goes for the coach with Nelson being in there, and the whole, like, like you said, everything was out of sync with the front office and management. That probably is the case, that we need to have, make sure that everything lines up for once, and that we, if we're going to hire a club president, that he has a second to everyone get on the same page and see where this team goes.
But this summer was the get on the same page. We got a new stadium. We've got, you know, Defoe's gone, and we're turning off the TVs and the ads. Like, we're starting fresh, right?
The bus is in the garage. We shut it down.
So if we start again in June, what's that saying?
Yeah, but the flip side is you can't spend this kind of money and not put expectations on it, right? And say, hey, don't worry. Yeah. We're gonna spend all this money on players, and don't worry if the team tanks and people stop showing up. We're giving you all this kind of rope. That's just not realistic, I don't think, from a management perspective, to say, you know, they brought in Aldador, Jovinko, Bradley to win, not to spend 2 years gelling. And
I don't like being the bitter guy, but the Jovinko thing was a huge pull at the, you know, the Italian community in Toronto to fill those extra 8,900 seats.
Yeah, they're like, who can we get to
I'm
fill
sure
these seats?
The short list was filled with great players, and then they picked the guy that would sell the most seats.
I don't know a more skeptical population than the Italian population. So
it is true. We had an Italian guy sitting next to me who just was shaking his head the whole game.
Yeah.
He was making comments, just being like they're hesitating. They don't pass. They're like, what are these guys doing? He's like, and Jackson, that guy is no good.
If that's their marketing strategy, it's not a smart one.
No. Because it'll backfire, right?
Yeah.
There's no more passionate and like emotional.
But
they put Jovinko at that one cafe dip that they play all the Italy national team games in. So it's everything is a push to fill that second tier.
Sure.
Which,
yeah.
you know, if they bring in a great guy and he fills a second tier, great. Like, I just want to see a team that's successful. I don't care if it 30,000 or 20,000.
I think I think Italian football, though, is like some of the best football. I mean, having played against, I think every sort of internet, like national, like sort of nationality in sort of rec soccer, when I play against Italians, they are like the toughest and most talented players. So,
well, they tried to follow Kuberman's Frings. Italy was next, right?
I think it's smart. I think it's smart to bring Italians in.
Yep.
Maybe it's a bias of mine, but that's like, you know. Anyway.
So, and then the way I think I want to sort of segue out, sort of a sights and sounds, and Eric, why usually one of the reasons why I like having you on the pod is getting the perspective. Your voice, you're quite hoarse, but you've trooped through the podcast. You're doing pretty good. You know, my first observation was that off the kickoff, the South End was off the national anthem. This was the first home opener in many years that all these, I've seen scarves like that.
Yeah.
Like in unison, the South End would look packed side, like end to end. And for a good majority of the game, it was vocal. You could see things going on in different parts of it. That was really great to see that they're trying to pull us together. Cause as we know, all the supporter sections that were moved in different parts of the stadium have now all been moved into the South End. So original 109, Kings of the North, Inebriati, they're kind of all been repositioned in the South End. And I would just, you know, some of your observations and what you saw from there, because whether that lines up from what we saw from the North End.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things I'd written about back in, I don't know if it was January, October, whenever, that, you know, for one reason or another, over the last 7-8 years, the supporters groups have sort of dispersed across BMO Field, and to get them all back in one zone would be a great thing. But at the same time, I felt for the guys in the capo box because there's just a huge gap between 112 and 116 that to get everyone connected, there seemed to be like frustration at certain points, and people were jumping between box to box to try and get things going. So it's a great first step, but if it doesn't work today when there's a full section, I think it's going to be really difficult in future games when 115 and whatnot becomes a bit of a dead zone. So if that sort of issue can be bridged and those groups can get together, I think there's your potential to grow the support in the South. But I really would like to see it grow, and today was a great, I mean, it sounded great from where I was, but at the same time, I was right in the front few rows of the 114. So I don't know, I looked back at every now and then, and you know, 15, 20 rows up, it was just standing, arms crossed kind of things. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the other thing that I'm, you know, will continue to watch and I'm curious is that, of course, as the home opener, we saw a certain level of support and enthusiasm and some energy off the top, you know, and some of it was organic. Not all of it, yeah, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, there was some genuine enthusiasm for the kickoff of the game. And with this result in hand against this type of opponent, you know, it's, I'm a little bit concerned how long it will last. What, like you said, what's this going to be like come June, July, if the team doesn't, you know, significantly pick up? If we have like a schizophrenic season like we did in 2009, where on paper we should have been a top, you know, top team in the league, but the results were just, they were just mind-boggling, that we could go in, you know, some games and do really well against tough teams and then play some pretty middling sides or bottom of the table teams and get routed on the road and not put in a good performance at home. That's where I'm sort of still looking at this side, is how much better they are and what this is going to mean, because I think at the bottom line for me
is chemistry is the X factor, right?
Yeah. The bottom line for me is this, is the supporters and getting a stadium. We always talk about it, you know, back to what it was. I don't know if that's going to happen, because...
Well, I think from that point of view, there's, you know, I mean, I mentioned today I didn't even get to see the penalty decision because of the flags. And I mean, for some people, that's just part of the game, is there's probably a good 15 people in 114 where I was, they just love singing and that passionate part of the game. They love it so much that if they miss parts of the game because their back's turned and they're trying to get people to sing, that's just part of their experience.
Right.
So if it can grow and you can get, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 more people singing along, I think that's going to grow the atmosphere. But at the same time, those are the people who really depend on results picking up. Whereas those 50 to 20 who are in my section today, at least...
You need a team to cheer for.
There's certain people who just... Results don't really matter. They just love being out there with, you know, friends and singing. And, I mean, if they can still do it after however much trouble Toronto FC has been going through, I mean, this is like the bottom, isn't it?
So we kind of already outlined, looking ahead, we got Montreal midweek. Curious to see how that one plays out, whether this team moves on to the next round of the Voyagers Cup. Part of me says, I don't know why we would be too pumped on that, although, you know, every opportunity to beat Montreal, I don't think we should pass it up, but there's definitely two sides to that coin, so we'll wait and see how that one shakes out, and then, of course, we're away to New England. Well, and next,
the Montreal problem puts the whole thing on there, because it's a rivalry, and you don't want to lose that, but at the same time, I do kind of have... I mean, I understand that the Voyager Cup means something to people who've been following it for years and years, but at the same time, I do have a problem with the fact that, you know, there's only... Like, you're straight in the semifinals. Round one is semifinals. Like, for that to mean something and teams to still want to play a B team in the semifinals, it kind of takes something away from it for me.
Yeah, sure.
But obviously, I mean, it's huge. Like, you get to play in the Champions League and you get to really test yourself against the continent.
Fuck that. They were, like, half away from... They would have been playing, I guess it could be Barcelona or Juventus, right?
But that's the pull, is I feel like a lot of MLS people, like the 61,000 who turned up in Montreal, that didn't turn up was it Portland they played on Saturday?
Yeah, yeah.
That was ridiculously empty in Montreal. But all those people are pulled by this, oh my God, we're going to play Bayern or Barcelona in Japan or wherever we play the Club World Cup.
Yeah.
That's the pull, not weird, the best team in North America. Like, it's completely different pull than winning the Champions League in Europe, let's say.
That's a good point.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so I think we're gonna leave it at that. Eric, you're not here at Eric Anderton _.
I am. Yeah, I changed it once at Eric Anderton _. Yeah, I won't change it again because it gets difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, tracking you down. And Steve Perry, you can get Steve through me.
You can't find me.
You can find him on what radio station is it?
89.5
on Sunday nights. You can find him there.
Punk rock, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm at Clark RNO. Any questions, debates, opinions, anything like that, feel free to fire them over. Obviously, we'll be back on the next home game against Portland. Midweek games are tough, and I'll try to pull out New England next weekend. But that's definitely what the schedule is looking like. So we'll leave it at that. Toronto loses 2-1 to Houston. Wah, wah, wah. And don't worry, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Eastside Stand Up is the only Toronto FC podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or by email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agreed, disagreed, it doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, The Footy Roundup, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.